Okay, welcome to SIBT The Spirit. This is a big deal. This class has been what, like 7 years in the making, and lots of putting it off and lots of like, oh, it's not ready quite. We've had m many rounds of chronic depletion, many rounds of the body. We've had a number of rounds of the mind. So this is a class a long time in the making, and this feels like a big event or a big deal at least. And usual little nervousness of, geez, I hope it goes well. I'm sure it will. And honestly, looking out at all these faces, I feel like I know each of you personally. I know a lot of you know each other already. So just want to take a moment to celebrate. Yeah. To celebrate being here and celebrate you being here and celebrate us being here. And yeah, welcome to SIBT The Spirit. All right, so let me go ahead and share. Oh, here comes Hattie. Hi, Hattie.
Sorry, I'm late.
No worries. We just had like a touching, meaningful opening. You can check it out on the recording. So,
Okay, cool.
right.
Thanks.
No worries. Glad you're here.
Me too.
All right. So here's our official little opening picture here. SIBT, the Spirit Soul Systems Informed Body Mind Spirit Therapy. We only have 2 hours or 2 hours and 15 minutes ish for each of these, so we're just gonna go ahead and get started. So we'll do the usual little copyright notice here. No part of the material may be reproduced or transmitted without permission of the ABMST or me. And you've all gotten the syllabus, and we'll check in about the syllabus here before too much longer. But you saw that they're kind of themes, and so the theme of today is I. And so the themes of the first three courses will be I, and then you, and then us, and then we'll move into some deepening skills. And hopefully you had the chance to look through the syllabus and you have a little bit of an idea of some of the topics we're going to be talking about. And I know a lot of you have already been diving into the readings a little bit, so you probably already have a little bit of an idea of what all we're going to be covering for the next few weeks. So, as always, I think it's nice to begin with introductions, essentially start creating the group vibe and the group dynamic that we have, because you all are working with each other as well. And so let's do this kind of, check-in style and have you go introductions so somebody gets to go first. And what I'd really like to hear is to have you tell us a bit about yourself. And in particular, how a systems-informed approach has been influencing your therapy that you've been doing with your clients and stuff like that. So now that you've all seen that, let me go ahead and pause the recording, or sorry, stop the sharing. And whoever would like to be brave and go first, go for it, and then you get to call on somebody until we're all done. Who'd like to begin?
Again.
Thanks,
Okay.
Kelly.
Yeah, I'm Kelly Yoakum and I'm in Michigan. And yeah, I've been excited about this class. I've only gotten about half the reading done for this time, but I really am enjoying it and I'm looking forward to getting more into that. And I had a new client this morning, and of course, I like epicenters in the systems, and we did talk about contributing factors and all of that. And it was, I mean, I didn't say we're talking about contributing factors, but anyway, it was really good. I love this work. I love how it's contributed to my practice. So thank you. And I will call on Laura Hedges.
Hi, everyone. I'm Laura. I'm in Northwest Washington State, and I do massage and craniosacral, and systems work is, I don't know, this work is just magical. Like, I just feel like I can feel the whole person take everything in from the whole person and really work with all aspects of people, and yeah, just it's fun and it's exciting, and it's a really nice perspective to work from. I'll call on Cindy.
Good morning. I'm in Oregon. I've been doing cranial sacral for a long time. And the systems work, I feel like it brings me in the room more. I mean, I definitely do the epicenter work, but that's what my focus is right now, is looking at the energy between me and the client. And I have a lot of questions about that and how contributing factors plays that into that energy. So I feel some confusion right now, but I'm sitting with it. I'm kind of enjoying it most of the time, but sometimes it's a little uncomfortable. But I'm excited about this class because I think the piece that I could use now is more centering so that I can explore those subtle energies with more clarity, maybe. Yeah, if that makes any sense. Thanks. Oh, I pick on someone. Andrea.
All right, thank you, Cindy. Hello, everybody. My name is Andrea. I live in New Jersey. I'm both a massage therapist, mainly doing craniosacral therapy work, and I'm also a social worker working towards my independent clinical license. This system-informed approach has really like given me a language to what I've been always doing, I feel like all my personal path, but also the professional path, was always seeking ways to addressing body, mind, spirit, and bringing it all together somehow. So it has helped me tremendously, in the craniosacral work, but also in my psychotherapy work, working also as a social worker in the systems. So I'm really excited about the spirit component. A long time ago, I invested a lot of time, developing the spirit and went to seminary and like all of that. But I've lost it over the last couple of years due to a couple of really personally bad experiences. So I'm really excited to kind of revisit it. This calling has been this calling. So I'm really excited to be here and yeah, engage with it in this way. So yeah, very excited to be here. And I'll call on Jason.
Nice to see you, Andrea.
Yeah, nice to see you too.
Yes, I'm Jason. I'm from Pennsylvania, and yeah, I've been really enjoying the systems informed work. Like Andrea said, it's also informed a lot of the other things I do, pulling it into my work with therapy and psychiatry. and it's been a good way to I think through all my work, be able to listen to people and to be able to connect with a person's inner wisdom in a way that makes it much clearer to see what needs to be addressed now or today. Because it's easy sometimes to see what I think, maybe needs to happen, but it's a way to address, a person, I think, in their totality in a way that makes therapy or treatment or whatever we're doing, much more spontaneous and led by what their whole system is presenting at the moment. So yeah, that makes any sense. But yeah, I'm very excited about this class. I'm also a former seminarian dropout, so I will call on how about Willie?
Hi, it's open. Thank you, Jason. It's very good to be here and to see a lot of faces that I know. some that I don't know. And sorry, I came straight from the airport and it took 2 hours to come here, so I'm a little bit have to calm down. Anyway, the work of Eric, for me, it's very easy because I don't feel I'm working and I'm doing nothing. And what is important that the guys that receive them receive it, they say it's very good. So nothing more to say. It's good to be here. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, everyone. Kevin, have you called? Great.
Hi, y'all. Excited to be here. See some familiar faces and some people I'm looking forward to knowing better. It's been really quite an interesting journey for me personally, professionally, to go through the systems-informed framework. I think I always have worked in a systems-informed way in that I see things in manual body work that just makes sense to me. But I found that having nomenclature and architecture to situate that within really helps in my conscious competence of articulating manual therapy well and for the service of another. I would also include that just looking at the presentation as more a whole person perspective, in that, you know, there's beauty in the in the problem, such as it were, and that there's answers in that solution, and that there's nothing that needs to be done other than just being with the wholeness of an individual, of myself, and respecting the intersubjectivity of that therapeutic relationship. And I've also evolved in ways that I'm not quite sure of yet. Super excited for the Spirit class, as it aligns with my own journey. Because I come from a Midwestern, very narrow viewpoint, culturally constrained perspective. And it's quite refreshing to start seeing other ways to consider traditions of knowledge, ways of being that are less restrictive on my system. So happy to be here, pleased to be a part of this with all of you, and really looking forward to the discovery. Calling on Kathy to go next.
Hey everybody, I'm Kathy Hinkle. I'm here in North Lake Tahoe, California. Beautiful sunny day. It's warm. Shouldn't be warm, it should be snowy. But yeah, I'm a massage therapist, craniosacral therapist, and I've really been enjoying the philosophy and psychology that this program brings together. It brings me back to college days. And so it kind of feels full circle from there, and just adds a multifaceted approach to the therapy. And I feel like since I've started this, the spirit part of it has been there, even before this part. So, and before I was kind of just like body, mind, you know. But I think even just starting all of it, it was like spirit came in, where I kind of just ignored that before with people. I was like, oh, that's their thing. But now I feel like I can assist people with that already. And that's pretty cool. So, thanks. I have to call on somebody. Okay, everyone I see went. Let's see, Danielle.
Hi there, Danielle Rodhouse here.
I practice on the central coast of California, Carmel Valley area. Just so happy to be back in community, learning and getting inspired by Eric and all of you today. Yeah, this work was a real game changer for my practice, I felt like. It just, I guess, widened my lens, helped me drop in and be a better listener, and really, yeah, kind of have the ability to zoom out and zoom in as necessary when working with these complex patterns of the body. So, just love Eric's kind of expanded approach. Gives you permission to kind of dance within these different realms in a different capacity, which I really love. And I feel like I do dance between, mind, body, and spirit on the table all the time. But to get to kind of feel into this information, hear what Eric has to say about it, and basically learn and grow with new ways to support in that realm, I'm just super excited and excited to be here with all of you. Thank you. I think I'll hand it over to Tony.
All right. Hello, everyone. I'm Tony from Montreal, Canada. It's springtime now, but it's snowing outside. For myself, this work has really grounded me of how to treat my clients in a different way. So again, not just body, not just looking at symptoms, but listening to the person as a whole. My chair work has changed. It's like that is part of the integrity of the work now. Before we would rush my clients get on the table. Now I take the time to do that chair work, and it has changed. It definitely has changed my practice, and my client sees that too. And yeah, I'm looking forward to go even further and see where it takes me. So I will choose Victor.
Good morning, everyone, or afternoon, whatever it is. I'm Victor from Phoenix area in Arizona. It's pretty warm right now. And I'm a licensed massage therapist. Started studying craniosacral work in 2007. And boy, has this SIBT work done so much for me too. I'm going to just reiterate what everyone else said, but to add how become instead of focusing on somebody with expertise in modalities, it's really a human being to a human being, and especially the chair work. Oh my gosh, has it opened up things for me, and people light up. They just light up when say, well, "What are you studying now?" And I share a little bit, and it's like, "Oh my gosh," you know. And it's so nice to see that. And then when somebody's faced with a paradox and we discover it and then even find a way through it, just what happens. I can't say enough. I'm really happy to be here. Okay. Let's see. Who have we not picked? Let's see.
If you haven't gone, you could raise your little yellow hands and then the people know who to.
Is that Jacob? Okay.
Thanks, Victor. And what an auspicious time to start the spirit course, Eric, on the spring equinox. A happy equinox,
I know,
everybody.
right? Yeah.
It's so cool. I had actually a spiritual ceremony this morning with some local people that do native traditions for the weather being. So what a powerful way to start the course. One thing I want to say I'm proud. When Eric first said he was starting this whole cohort, I was like, I'm in. That sounds resonant for me, and here I am having taken all three now. So I'm really proud of myself because I could see myself not following through sometimes with the ADHD and whatnot. I'm a chiropractor, craniosacral therapist, and this work and craniosacral therapy has transformed the way I practice completely. Flip. I don't just adjust anymore. I treat the whole body, and it's really powerful, and it just correlates really well with the functional medicine, chiropractic, and everything. I see the whole body. This is just such powerful work, and I really appreciate this because not only is it helping my patients and clients, but it's also helping my spiritual practice and my growth and creating that whole reciprocal co-creative container that we all do with each one of our clients. So yeah, I'm just really excited to be here, really excited to dive into the I, we, and us. Really powerful stuff. So excited to share this container. And with that, I'm in. Cheryl, I'll pick you.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. I'm Cheryl in Ohio, and also excited about first day of spring today. the SIBT work, I can't imagine working without it, honestly. Just from the initial years ago when I first started working with Eric with the class. It just was like a just complete life changer. I think I just love like the simple elegance of it, like it, taking the pressure off of us by listening to the body and respecting the body and what the person is bringing into the session that day, and just really listening and seeing that people feel heard. Because of that, I don't know, that just really feels really important, I think now more than ever. So just being able to listen and support and letting people feel heard and having that communication and connection in that way. So I'm looking forward to this community for the next few months. Thank you. And I think Hattie, right?
Hi everybody, I'm in France, so I'm in your future. But I'm time is what, linear or non-linear? So I don't know. Anyway, basically, I am super happy to be here, and I just remember starting the Epicenter work in England when Eric taught a course there a long, long time ago. It was kind of when I was really starting with the craniosacral therapy. I do a lot of sports massage as well. Anyway, it was pretty amazing, and being able to tune into these like little epicenter points, which I kind of felt were like these profound stillness areas, which then resonate with different body patterns. And since doing the mind, how much that expresses into the mind state, and then obviously going further into encompassing the whole of the soul in the whole of the body system work and everything that arises with it. So it's been a great journey, and it's been super interesting to see where like some of these body where the bo body likes to dialogue from, and what it likes to start to talk about in relation to a person's life or even past lives and various amazing things that come out of our human selves. So I'm excited to be here to see what how the spirit will progress things even more. And I'm sure it is going to be great work for me personally, as well as all my clients and community here as well. So, yeah, thank you. Good to be here. And I will pass the baton to who's living on someone more last? Oh, yeah, Helena.
Hello, I'm Helena and I live in Sweden. My English is very rusty at the moment, so please tell me if you don't understand me. I have waited for this class for a long time because I really enjoyed the other ones, and I really like the complex system thinking in this. And I notice it widens my perspectives and it increases my perception skills. I like the way it's working with my mind and thinking and widens my awareness. I've been working with shamanic practice for many, many years, even before I started the CST, and I really enjoy these classes with Eric because I get to use the shamanic thinking in a more science approached way, in a sense. And I really, really enjoy that. And also, I really like to see you because apparently you are very interested in working with complex systems and as well and the thinking. And that's not very common, actually. People don't like this. It gets scary and uncomfortable. So I need you.
Love it. Community and complexity. All right. I think we got everybody, right? Is there anybody who did not get a chance to say hi? All right, well, welcome. Can't say enough. Yeah, can't say enough about how happy I am to see you. I definitely like the idea of building community and sort of complex and systems thinking, complexity thinking. And, I think a lot of you know me well enough that as I get older, one of the things that's particularly important to me is supporting people in finding their own unique voices. And so much of the systems informed work is trying to create a framework, not to tell people how to behave or how to treat, but how to find your own unique therapeutic voice within the field of body, mind, spirit work. And so hopefully this course is a bit of a capstone to what we began with the chronic depletion class and continued on with the body and mind. So yay for that. Also, Kathy had mentioned something in her introduction that I suspect is probably a lot of you might resonate with. It's that thing of how, as we enter as therapists, as we enter a new phase of our own growth, clients start finding us who kind of help us propel that along. So, how many of you found that just signing up for the Spirit course and knowing that this was coming and imagining that all of a sudden you started finding that this stuff was showing up on your table? Well, before we even got here today. Yeah. It's exciting. Okay. So let's get back to the presentation. And thank you for your introductions. Okay. Just a little bit on the course overview. As I've already mentioned, the theme. Session one is I, the theme for session two is you, the theme for session three is us, theme for four is deepening, and for five, deepening and closure. And then kind of what we're doing today, we're gonna do a little, gonna pair you up and have you go chat with each other here in a few minutes. Talk a little bit about what does it mean to walk the talk. From walking the talk from like a spiritual humility and from a spiritual competency point of view, what are some attitudes and values that we can hold as we begin opening the door to this with our work with clients? I will talk a little bit about what we can do with our hands to start incorporating the spirit. I'll be honest with you, as far as like hand skills and epicenter skills, we're pretty much doing that right away today. So that we have the next 5 weeks to practice it. And then really the rest of the 5 weeks is more about a broad swath introduction to different ways of thinking and being that then we incorporate into our hand skills and into our chair work skills. and then we'll end the day with, I would expect that this is a topic that's going to naturally bring up our limitations and confront us a tiny bit, hopefully in a very gentle way. And so we'll be kind of asking the question of what discomforts do you have? What discomforts do I have as we begin opening the door to the transpersonal in our work with clients? And the more work you can do to identify what discomforts or limitations you currently have, more awareness you have on what we can all work on or what you can work on. Then at the very end of today, we have given you the selection of readings that we have. As I mentioned in the email, really try to keep the readings as short as possible because there's a lot of them. And so what's required for the course hopefully is actually fairly easy to accomplish. And then you got a lot of resources to just carry on with you from moving forward. And you probably, if you look through the reference list, a lot of those aren't even required readings at all. They're just things that might be helpful for you as you grow and continue in the work. And then we'll talk about the two major assignments that we kind of have as part of this course. One of them is going to be a case, a case history, a case write-up of a client of your choosing. And then I'll also pair you up with each other and just have you do a little short presentation on some world traditions. So that way there's a chance where we get to teach each other a little bit too. So before we go any further, I did want to just highlight any questions on the syllabus or the readings. Has anybody had any difficulty accessing the materials or just otherwise questions about the course at this point? And go ahead and call up the syllabus in case you all want to see that as well. Okay. Yeah. Any questions on the syllabus or the readings? Were you all able to access the folder that I sent you to and all that? Okay. Just really briefly, any of the readings that you're particularly interested in that you've taken a look at? Yeah, Andrea, go for it.
I love Yalom's work. I read everything and I, he's like the especially, I mean, I did a lot of the readings before, for school and all that, for the group work that he presents and all that. And I also read his biography, but Becoming Myself. But looking at the existential psychotherapy and really diving deeper into kind of the role that death and the fear of death and our relationship with death plays, in the client presentation was really amazing, was very eye-opening, I think, with a lot of the, severely mentally ill people I see. And then also the meaning kind of, connecting how important it is to have meaning in our lives personally, but also the meaning of life in general. So I thank you for suggesting that book. That was definitely super helpful.
Oh, good. Yeah, and it's a big tome. I mean, if you any of you want to read the whole thing, it's I definitely recommend it, but it's not a quick one. Thanks, Andrea. Yeah, Kelly, go for it.
I mean, there were a lot of things that I really liked, but what I'm going to mention is I enjoyed this, like, kind of the still time, character strengths, those four things, the spiritual models, the centering tools and spiritual models, and going through and just reevaluating what mine are and how I
Right.
incorporate them. So I spent quite a bit of time, and I
Yeah.
really appreciated that.
Nice. That's from the Contemplative Practices book you're talking about.
Yep.
Yeah,
Yep,
nice.
in action.
Yeah, like the functions of contemplative practice in our lives, for sure.
Yeah, and the way that that he talks about, kind of universal concepts that we can connect with our clients with, and which I attempt to do, but I really like seeing that. And then the death fear and stuff. There's a lot in there, but I can stop right here.
Well, and think about like way back in the body class, how much we were emphasizing additive interventions and subtractive interventions. And kind of making the case that therapy in general tends to focus on having less of the things we don't want. And in the body class, really inviting us to start being aware of also trying to incorporate in the therapy the aspect of having more of the things we do want, the additive interventions. And so that's what's nice. And what I heard, part of what I heard you say just now, Kelly, and what I think is nice about this is, as we move into the transpersonal, I mean, we'll definitely be talking about trauma in this course because that's an important part of it. But also, just the contemplative practices piece is so much about inviting people into a life where they're having more of the things that they do want.
Having that many books jumps on my natural tendency to bounce around. But the one I've found myself in the most has been Carl Schmitt's Trauma in the Soul. And I was finding myself wishing I had that with SER1. Just even the introduction section of that was great to read. So thanks for bringing that forward.
I think I'll go back to that one once once we get through all of this experience.
Those two books, the Kalshad books, are amazing. They're very dense. And all we're going to use is just really one vignette from the Trauma and the Soul book is all we're going to use in this course, but just to invite you to know that it's there. I had the good luck of actually studying with Kalshad directly for a year. He's a cool dude. And the part of how we'll be approaching trauma in this course is, for trauma survivors, particularly those who have had like repeated trauma, trauma has a way of kind of thinning the veil between this world and the transpersonal. And that's something that Kalshad really gets into with his trauma books. From a Jungian point of view, how, and anyway, you'll find that the more we work with like particularly like chronic trauma that people had, how sometimes they just have a greater openness to the transpersonal too, in sometimes uncomfortable ways. We'll also explore that a little bit with the videos with Jeffrey Kripal and Elizabeth Krohn. Those videos, when you get around to watch, I think you'll really love those a lot. Okay, so sounds like the syllabus was okay. Sounds like you found the read, the kind of the sequence of readings okay. Cool. All right, so let's keep on going then. So I'm about to send you all off into breakout rooms, but let me show you what the directions are here. And so I'm gonna have you go into pairs. We're not gonna give you a ton of time, maybe like 4 minutes to talk each, so maybe like 10 minutes altogether. And just do the kind of classic listening exercise where one of you goes first, and for like 4 minutes or for 3 to 4 minutes, just get to talk, no interruptions. It's just you getting to talk about your beliefs. And then if you're not the talker, I want you to put everything down and listen with your whole being. Listen with your body, your mind, your spirit, your soul, your emotions, to just full listen 100% to this person who's talking about their beliefs in front of you. And you're not allowed to interrupt them. And then once they're done, then you'll have your turn and the other person will listen to you. And then if there's any time left over, you can kind of engage with each other a little bit. But it's more about really having a chance to just express your beliefs without being interrupted and being heard in them. And it's also more about your chance to really practice being wholeheartedly with someone as they talk about their beliefs, even if they happen to be different than yours. So here are the prompts. What beliefs do you personally have about the transpersonal? And if you're not familiar with that world, transpersonal just means larger than self, basically. So what beliefs do you personally have about the transpersonal? And so that could be spirit, soul, afterlife, meaning of life, basically stuff that's larger than just you. And then another prompt on that is what influences have you had in your life that brought you to your current beliefs? Those are the two main questions. I'll plop those in the chat as well. Hold on, stop that. And grab those. So, any questions on the instructions?
I got one.
Yeah, sure.
Roughly how long is it?
I'm going to give you like 10 minutes for both of you. So that's basically you could aim for like 3 to 4 minutes of talking each,
Okay, perfect.
and then a little bit of time. And so I'll send a little message like, hey, this is a good time to shift on to number two if you haven't yet. Okay, so let's see. We got 16. We're going to do 8 rooms. So who's left over? I'll have you. We'll put you into room of three. Okay, so go ahead and head into your rooms. Who's the left out person? I think we're all good.
Sounds
Oh, my humming. I might get my audios on.
Yeah, you're, yeah, sorry. I just hadn't said anything yet. I'm just waiting for everybody to finish coming. Here we go. Everybody's back now. All right. So, well, first off, practical question for me for whenever for practical question for me for whenever this class happens again. Was that enough time? Was that too short, too long, or just right?
We could have
Just right.
used like 1 or 2 more minutes.
Okay. So
It was
for
good.
next, more time or 1 to 2 more minutes. Okay, thank you for that. Okay. Okay, hold on. Let me draw a little note to myself. Yep.
Eric, yeah, with his suggestion of 1 to 2 more minutes, what I really liked was we said our thing and then we quickly reflected back what we said, and that was really helpful.
Okay. Helpful. Thank you. Okay, for our discussion, so two prompts. First one for you all. The first one is, hey, so how was that? What was it? So when you were as a speaker, what was it like for you to speak about your transpersonal beliefs openly with another person that you may or may not know that well?
I'll say it was difficult just because it's something I really, I rarely get to do with a stranger or with somebody that, yeah. It was a relatively new experience. Even like with I'm involved with some spiritual practice groups, you're with like-minded people, so you assume that you share beliefs, and which you should never assume, but here you're with somebody completely, new. And so that was a new, nice, new, somewhat difficult thing to do.
Nice. Yeah, feel free to just jump in, people. Yeah.
I found it comfortable because I get asked that often. So it wasn't hard to do at all.
Okay. Love that we got the diversity.
I found it comfortable, fun. I like to share my perspective to, incite conversation with fellow people around me anyway, so it was just really nice to be able to share that.
Cool. Any others? Anybody have
I'm
any?
having some major connect. I'm having some major connectivity issues, so I'm missing quite a lot that goes on. And
Oh no, I'm sorry.
it's on my end. It appears to be whatever's going on in the building today.
Okay. Well, you'll have the recording to review back to as well. Oh, and I see Kelly had wrote vulnerable in the chat, and Kevin wrote vulnerable at first, but expansive and warm as I leaned into the experience. Nice. All right. And so the second one that I wanted to ask as well was now as a listener. So we heard from people that for some of you it was comfortable, for some of you it was vulnerable, for some of you it was uncomfortable at first. What was it like for you as a listener to listen to someone else share their beliefs openly?
I was really interested and curious. I found it easy to hear when someone was very clear about their type of practice, which my partner was. I enjoyed it.
Nice.
Yeah, I found it's always fun and exciting to learn the other perspectives, and it also sometimes opens new perspectives in myself to see it from a different dimension. So I really enjoy listening to the other person's thoughts and feelings on that.
It was really interesting, and it was really nice that you had the caveat of not
just listening, like you really how you said that before we started, to like make sure you're just listening and fully being aware of what the person is saying, like just being present in that way and not interrupting. So it was nice that it wasn't a dialogue back and forth, but just being able to listen to each other.
I really enjoyed that too. It was I love always learning about people's thoughts and perspectives on things. So it always helps me to try to broaden my mind too, and it also makes me also try to check in with my judgments and stuff as well, so I can yeah, I guess just little like red flag myself with certain things, which is always a great thing to do too.
I found that, to start out, it was kind of a new experience for all of us. So I was a little shaky. My partner perhaps was as well. But then, like, just settling into that listening space helped to find attunement really quickly. So just playing in that and letting someone else express freely, what a gift.
Nice. Thank you for being willing to do that with each other. And, just as the first kind of little exercise too, a takeaway is, particularly for all of you. You've been through multiple classes in craniosacral therapy. You've been through the SIBT classes. You wouldn't be here if you weren't sort of naturally an open and curious person. You would have decided this wasn't right for you a long time ago. And so I'm not surprised to hear that most of you really enjoyed being on the learning end, especially, and were able to approach other people with curiosity. But even within that, there's still the experience when you were the speaker for probably most of you that there was some sense of it being vulnerable or a sense of it being a little scary or maybe not particularly easy. But that when the right environment is there, then everybody's able to drop into it and work in. And so now, particularly with clients and the clients that you have, hopefully you can also really keep in your mind and heart that it's probably really uncomfortable and vulnerable for them to start sharing with you those kinds of beliefs. Even if you have a solid relationship, even if they trust you, they don't really know how you're going to respond. They don't know what you are. And with a lot of our clients, they might have a significant history of embarrassment and shame or spiritual trauma that they're coming with as well. So these might be really important topics for people to work with and to be seen in and to struggle with. But also be very unlikely to want to talk about these with anybody because they don't know how they're going to be received. Particularly with people who have left spiritual traditions and have been ostracized by their families, and there can be some really difficult and challenging feelings that are at the core about their relationship with God or Goddess or the belief. So I just want to highlight that, yes, I have no doubt that you're glad to be there and fully present with somebody, and it still can be difficult. Does that make sense to just continue holding that in your awareness? All right, let's come back to the presentation. All right, so we have the what beliefs do I have conversation. We already did the Q&A and the discussion. So goals of the course. We're moving into the material a little bit. Basically, again, there is going to be zero attempt in this course to try to tell you that things work any one particularly way, in particular, ontologically speaking. But instead, the course is more about cultivating openness and the type of attitude where it becomes likely for someone to be seen and share with you their beliefs and for you to be able to move within them. We have a couple of people who have been through seminary training and would love to hear from their experiences as well. What it's like to learn how to move in and out of other belief systems without necessarily having your own threatened. Let me say that again. that part of what we're trying to do is to be able to move in and out of other belief systems without having our own be threatened in the process. That takes a lot of emotional and intellectual maturity. And that's why this class is the end of the series rather than like at the beginning of the series. So the goals of this course, to elevate curiosity, openness, and fluidity in our work with clients as they work with transpersonal aspects of being. And sometimes it will be explicit and open that that's what you're working on. And as you know, a lot of times it may be unconscious. You know, on the surface, it may just look like you're treating a tissue-based pattern. It doesn't mean that the work that's happening isn't also touching much larger aspects of them too. And so intellectually and philosophically, it also means being able to move and participate fluidly within diverse religions, diverse beliefs, and diverse systems of meaning. And to do all that while deepening and holding our own beliefs with reverence, while letting go of any attempt at certainty in the beliefs of someone else. And so, a lot of what we're trying to do over the next few weeks is expose you to such a broad selection of transpersonal related tools and beliefs that you will have a lifetime of future growth as you continue in systems informed body work, body, mind, spirit therapy. So here are some not goals of the class. This course will not be trying to provide answers to the transpersonal, rather the exact opposite. We're trying to role model and create openness and expansion. And I just want to highlight, most of you know how little patience I have these days over territorialism and modality wars. I think has zero productivity to try to talk about what modality is better than another. Rather, it's more about strengths and weaknesses and limitations and stuff like that. But, way back in SIBT, the body, we're talking about paradigms and chronic depletion. We're talking about paradigms and belief systems. And that part of the job of a modality is to try to convince you it's true and try to provide answers. And so I just want to reflect how the core CST training that you would have taken to get here very much was trying to give you answers. And then even in the chronic depletion class, it's trying to give you answers. And then we've been kind of dialing that back a little bit. That in the body class was still answers. Hey, here's an epicenter for this body system, and here's an epicenter for that body system, and this is how you put them together, while at the same time opening up bigger questions of reapportioning resiliencies. So I put SIBT the body, well, answers-ish. And then in the mind course at this point is about introducing dialoguing and chair work and experience epicenter. But most people find that that's the mind class isn't providing answers as much as it's opening up questions. And then same thing with this class, we have a specific goal of not providing answers. So what we will be doing in this class, we'll be giving you some tools to pay attention to with your hands and begin using with your clients right away, with the idea in mind that the more practice you have, the more experiences you have to share with each other in these live sessions, and then also in office hours. I'll still be holding office hours every Monday at 1 o'clock New Mexico time, at noon California time. And then the rest of the course is exposing you to various viewpoints and attitudes to begin the journey of finding your own voice within transpersonal, systems-informed personal growth and therapy. Okay, so a little bit of a didactic lecture for a moment of just highlighting what is the attitude? What is the therapeutic attitude for transpersonal work? You're already doing this. You're already kind of embodying this. You were doing it with each other just now, I'm sure. Let's just actually give some terms that we can kind of hang on to a little bit and play around with. And the terms I wanted to introduce for the therapeutic attitude for this first one is a spirit of openness, a spirit of curiosity, a spirit of spiritual humility, and then kind of an attitude of negative capability. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But let's go through each of those a tiny little bit. So, what do we mean by spiritual openness? Well, so just looking through the literature, here's a nice, easy definition for what spiritual openness is. It is an open and inclusive approach to faith. So the exact opposite of trying to proclaim that one faith is better, but more of a curiosity and inclusion of different ways of believing. And on a psychological level, openness to spiritual openness has a lot of similarity with a slightly different construct called openness to experience. One of the main ways that people talk, that psychologists will talk about personality, is they'll talk about the big five, and it's five kind of personality characteristics that, you can think of them as like dials that somebody, and one of them is openness. And so someone just in their personality naturally have a lot of openness. Other people can naturally have a lot less openness, kind of like a dial. And some of those other big personality characteristics, I always forget it. It's like openness, extroversion. I should have written this down ahead of time, but it's openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, like negative emotionality. And then there's one I'm forgetting. Anyway, so one of them is openness to experience as a core personality trait. And from that point of view, you can really some a person who has a high amount of openness to experience generally engages with the world with a high level of creativity and imagination and curiosity. Tend to have both emotional and intellectual creativity. They also tend to have more attentiveness to their inner world and their inner experience and their inner feelings. A person who has a high level of openness to experience might be the person like, well, I've never gone skydiving before. Let's go try it, Or I've never tried this type of food before. Let's see how, and they're like, ooh, I really hate that. Those would be people who tend to have a high level of openness to experience. So now imagine taking that personality characteristic and applying that to the spiritual realm. Now we're starting to understand what they mean by spiritual openness. And even as I describe it, you might kind of do a little self-inventory. It's not right or wrong. It's just different ways to be. But you might kind of reflect on your own, huh, as a personality characteristic, how much openness do I have? Do I tend to be a type of person that naturally seeks out novel and unique and new experiences? Or do I tend to be a person that tends to like a little bit more controllable or narrow bandwidth of experiences? Again, not good or bad. For our case, particularly when we're doing therapy with others, it's important that we have a high level of openness or spiritual openness. And then I've already said this, but I think it's worth mentioning again that in the mature faith, in the mature spirituality, an openness to other experiences does not detract or diminish our experience. Rather, it enhances it. It becomes sort of like, by fully appreciating someone else's beliefs, I also become able to fully appreciate mine as well. The next idea in that little list I wanted to talk about was spiritual humility. Spiritual humility and openness are similar. Now, spiritual humility is more, there are different definitions of it. One that I liked, it's an inward posture of recognizing one's relationship to the transpersonal rather than relying on self or ego. So even thinking, even having a belief that there are parts of the universe that are bigger than just me, that's already starting to be a posture of spiritual humility. Whereas if somebody were endorsing the ideas, hey, the buck stops with me, I'm all that there is, might makes right, I do this because it serves me, that would be like a low level of humility or a lower level of spiritual humility. Whereas, the world's more complex and I'm capable of understanding it, I'm going to do the very best I can. What do you believe? How do you believe? What are your faith? What are your practices? Those would be a little bit more attached to the idea of spiritual humility. And I don't know that we're going to spend a whole lot of time talking about forgiveness in this course, although that might be a good topic to talk about at some point, is that the idea of spiritual humility also gets closely linked to forgiveness. And so like in some of the research that happens as well, it's like let's say that I'm part of a particular religion and somebody in my community violates it and now they're in trouble and we all have judgment against that person. And in order for that person to kind of come back into good community, they're probably going to have to demonstrate spiritual humility. In other words, not defensiveness that they did the right thing and that everything else. It's more like once we see a person who has a humility and a fallibility and a willingness to apologize and all that they're contemplating their own relationship to the transpersonal, then we tend to see spiritual humility in them. And so that also kind of goes along with the ability to forgive. It's like, okay, I forgive you for the transgression, even though it was really painful. So spiritual humility gets closely linked to the forgiveness, and it's easier to forgive someone who is oriented to others rather than self-oriented. Somebody who's able to regulate their ego and self-focused emotions in productive ways, instead of going drinking and fighting, that they're reflective and apologetic and take ownership for their impact on others. Also, that the person has a view of their self in relationship to others, that they live in a real way, and also in recognition that there are parts of the universe that are bigger than just us. And I plopped a couple of articles that kind of get to that definition in the folders as well, if you want to go check them out at some point. Negative capability. This is one of those terms that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. The term negative capability was originally coined by the poet John Keats, but since then has really been adopted as a term in psychoanalytic circles and also in a format that also tends to get used in Jungian circles. And the person that tends to get credited it is a psychoanalyst by the name of Wilfred Bion. And he described negative capability as a state of listening to someone in which there is no memory, desire, or understanding. It's sort of a way of being with a client or being with a person where you're honestly trying to let go of everything in the past and just be fully arrived in the present moment and in that experience of them wholeheartedly, whole beingly, and that in this negative capability where you're not bringing with you or trying not to bring with you all of your judgments, ideas, and labels, that in that process, we're more fully alive and that the magic of the transpersonal can kind of arise in the present moment when we're not blocking it with our judgments and thoughts. So, you can think of negative capability as a willingness to allow experience in the present moment to be unfettered by active interpretation, labeling, cognitive processes. It is an active process of being receptive with someone in the experience that you both are having in that moment. I think there's a lot of connection between, the negative capability. To me, that's kind of a Western term that might be approached from Eastern points of view a bit more, a little bit more simplistically, like in the form of awareness of awareness. So like in the meditation stuff that we've done in the earlier courses, where we talk mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of emotions, mindfulness of thoughts, and then awareness of awareness itself. And that experience of just like the flow of experience, noticing our brain's attempts to label and understand it, but without getting identified or attached to them. To me, that's the way that the Buddhist psychology folks talk about it, to me seems very similar to what the psychoanalysts talk about with negative capability. And interestingly enough, most of you know how much I dislike the word neutrality, particularly in relationship to craniosacral therapy. This might be one of the better descriptions, well, a better description of the origin of what craniosacral practitioners think of as neutral. And where I tend to like this is it does really highlight the activity that I have as a listener, that it's not just it's not about the person that's talking as much as it is really adopting a particular stance in order to more fully be in the co-created experience with that other person. If you get interested in that idea, again, the cyclist list with the last name of Bion, if you wanted to go find out more stuff with him, that would be a good way to go. And so when, as a practitioner, we're really exhibiting negative capability, we're also really demonstrating the capacity to tolerate uncertainty, possibility, and appreciation of the transpersonal. Again, in sort of a quasi-mystical sort of way, it's almost like thinking that your labels, your interpretations, your meaning-making in some ways might close the door to the transpersonal experience. And so let's create something a bit larger together. So
And
go ahead.
could you compare that to beginner's mind with their
Yeah,
and
I think that would be a
in
great thing to compare it to. Is there more you'd like to say on that?
just wondered if you would differentiate it at all because you would bring skill in maybe with a negative capability. So is there, would you differentiate it from beginner's mind in that way?
I think that is a super clever question and might be one that would be a better like discussion for the group. Like I don't want to pretend like I have the answer for that one. So I tend to agree with what you're saying. My sense of beginner's mind is almost very much like an unfettered flow of experience, whereas I tend to think of awareness and negative capability as having that additional experience, like knowledge of the kind of labeling interruption that my brain can do, and holding that in softness so that way it can more fully participate in the experience. So I'm not a Dharma teacher. That's my understanding. What do you all think about that? Do you know sort of the difference between beginner's mind and awareness of awareness and negative capability? Any other thoughts?
I kind of, when we relate to somebody through this negative capability, we're almost leaving ourselves and coming back to ourselves. And the coming back part is where you become most aware of your awareness, in my opinion, or my experience. So it's my grandmother used to say, when you put your feet in somebody else's shoes, it's really a ride. It's like a whole nother universe. And she apparently was really good at it, and she said, you really can't judge somebody until you put your feet in their shoes. And she really did that. And anytime I read a negative capability or there's a poet, a brainy guy named Marvin Braum, he wrote a play called Negative Capability based on Keats' writings. And so it always reminds me of my grandmother and how it struck me as I was a kid, and I was like, wow, she really does do that, put her feet in other people's shoes and see what it's like.
I love it. Oh, she sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Cindy, does that give you some stuff to continue to at least ponder in your own way on that one a bit?
I find the whole thing, fascinating. Like, in homeopathy, we're talking about this Native American legend where someone like comes out of, I'm going to not do it justice, but someone comes out of the grave, and this man who's standing over the grave, and he splits him in two, and the one side is like a blank slate, and the other side is the observer witness. And this entity that comes out of the grave is like, now you're a healer because part of you can, go into, like you're saying, somebody else's shoes, and part of you can watch it. And I'm wondering, I don't know, all of it is kind of subtle, but similar, but there seem to be subtle differences between all three: negative capability, beginner's mind, and that idea of part of us totally engaged and Getting lost in the interaction and part of us watching, right? I don't, I'd also think about it more.
I think that was a great example, and I also really appreciate how, as we move into the transpersonal, we almost have to move into poetry and allegory and metaphor, because direct words stop really accessing it at some point. And so even that example of being seen too, and like being able to be in that, put yourself in other shoes while also kind of holding it at the same time, that does seem to have like a sense of maturity to it, or a sense of like awareness capability to it that maybe just pure unfettered beginner's mind may not. So to me, that makes a lot of sense what you're getting at. And here's the thing that you could try, or we could all try. If you have a meditation or a contemplative practice, whether it's walks or whatever else, that might be a good one to just sort of sit with. Okay, all right, what's my understanding of beginner's mind? And as I try to sit within it, what's that like versus what you understand negative capability to be? So, walking the talk, basically, now for the next 10 weeks and moving forward, you're probably already seeing it with some of your clients where the transpersonal is surfacing, or you're becoming more aware of it in your work with your clients. So, the invitation is, all right, let's open that door, as much as you're willing to. You got a number of weeks where we're all hanging out with each other, where you get to practice this and make mistakes and come back, and we get a chance to talk about it. So that's why I wanted to start with like the attitude to sort of embody and the practice a little bit, and the awareness that it's difficult for people, or can be for people, to talk about beliefs. So as we're walking the talk, that part of working within the transpersonal is a spiritual plurality. So yes, I want you to have your beliefs. Also, part of this is not subjecting everybody else to our beliefs. And so, how can we really move fluidly in and out of other people's belief systems? And I'm not asking you to say that everything, I'm not asking you to say that everything is all of a sudden okay. I mean, if somebody has a belief system that really allows them to do horrible things to another person, that's still not okay. So, it's basically being able to move in and out of spiritual faiths and belief systems while still holding core moral values of, do no harm and act to benefit others and other stuff like that. And then the invitation for the next 10 weeks is to really practice role modeling, curiosity, and openness to diverse perspectives, particularly diverse transpersonal perspectives, and to really get curious about how they function in the individual's life. So if a person, hold on, I'm gonna, there we go. So yeah, I mean, it's not just enough to know someone's beliefs, but also how's that function for them? How is it helping them? How might it be hurting them? What are its strengths? What are its limitations? Also, spiritual and cultural humility. Acknowledging the presence, influence, and limitations of your perspective, leading with curiosity about how other people structure and participate in their beliefs, letting others lead you into their worldview. I've really come to appreciate that one of the best therapeutic skills with chair work is to be clueless, is to, if you ever watch the old TV show with Columbo, Columbo's like non. How many of you know the Columbo reference? Okay, most of you. Yeah, if you don't know the Columbo reference, he's basically a detective that always seemed kind of befuddled and was always just asking questions. And people basically tended to not take him that seriously because of those questions, but he ended up solving amazing, amazing crimes in the process. And there's a lot of value therapeutically in basically being Columbo, not giving advice, not making suggestions, constantly being curious, like, wait, how does that work for you? And realizing that people move themselves into incredibly deep places just by playing Columbo therapeutically. And then in other courses, we begin the conversation on intersectionality. This is another form of intersectionality. And so, really coming to appreciate and embrace the complex and fluid nature of identity, and that we can have different relationships to the transpersonal and our identity. For some people, being a Catholic is a major part of their identity. For other people, being an atheist is a major part of their identity. And for other people, it may not be part of their identity as much. And also understanding that identity tends to shift contextually. You might remember that we have the intersectionality module in the counseling course if you ever want to go back and double check that one again. Okay. Any initial, well, we've already kind of covered this, but any other thoughts or responses just to the attitude stuff that we talked about or the walking the talk aspect?
It's all very good. And I'm not going to have difficulty with beginner's mind because I'm already finding myself expanding into this. So thanks for sharing. I feel like I'm in the right room and just excited for what comes next.
Sweet. Thanks, Kevin. Okay, so let's talk about some hand skills. So, again, we're just going to lay it out there on the first course, and then you get to just keep practicing it. So, hand skills, whole person epicenter, experience epicenter, really witnessing the intersection of physicality and vitality. So what we're going to talk about is stuff that you should already be fairly familiar with, just using it in a slightly different way as we move into the spirit soul realm. So let's go back and do a quick review way back to the body class. You might remember we introduced the non-restriction based global epicenter, the epicenter that we tend to use whenever the mid-tide shows up as the predominant rhythm. And you might remember that part of the non-restriction-based global epicenter was watching the tissue work, but underneath the tissue work, also being able to watch the body reapportion its strengths and its resiliencies. And if you've been doing that for a while, you're really getting more of an appreciation of how that body, those body energies of reapportioning are kind of the foundation for the tissue work change that's happening above. And that we need to, and that it's good to not only watch both simultaneously, but to continue deepening or understanding of how that body reapportioning its strengths and resiliency is actually kind of the driving factor for the tissue work. All right, so we introduced that back in the body class. And expansion off of the global epicenter that we introduced in the chronic depletion class. And remember, the chronic depletion class, the global epicenter we gave you was basically restriction based. And so it wasn't until the body that we really introduced additive and subtractive interventions and got a chance to start tweaking that a bit. And so that non-restriction based global epicenter really became a chance to witness the network of restrictions reworking themselves on the surface, became a chance to witness the foundational life and vitality of the body reapportioning itself underneath the restriction pattern that was reworking itself. And the invitation, hope ever since that time, has been to witness, explore, and learn from that interplay of energy reapportioning and the tissue work happening above them. Okay, so that's one foundation that's bringing us into this conversation today. Just reminding you of that. Then we have the whole person epicenter. Remember, we introduced the whole person epicenter in the body as well. This is the epicenter that we tend to engage when the long tide is the predominant rhythm that shows up. And you might remember the way we described it, however you feel it is fine. You don't have to feel it my way. The way I tend to perceive the whole person epicenter, it's almost like the person's entire being almost becomes like the sand in an hourglass. And the epicenter is that sort of point where the sand is draining out for the whole person epicenter. And you might remember in the way that I conceptualize it or how it seems to show up in my mind is that in addition to the sand kind of going through the epicenter, there tends to be kind of protrusions that come out of it anteriorly and posteriorly. in that the anterior protrusions, at least to me, seem to be connected with the future and the potential of the person, and the post-hoc projection tends to be connected with the past of the person. And that as we work with the whole person epicenter, not only are we engaging everything that the person is, but I also like to pay attention to, are those protrusions kind of equal, or is it imbalanced, or is it more one or the other? And so that starts to give information of like, okay, is the work that's happening more about future and potential, or maybe about working with the past while we work with the whole person? And so that was really our very first talk about witness, about the whole person epicenter being a way to support the person in their entirety, including the past, present, future, and potential. And if you've done a fair amount of whole person epicenter work, you've probably already learned that it tends to invite a transpersonal dialogue, that it's not so much about finding past traumas as much as like, hey, what's going on for you right now? What do you got planned for the future? Life transitions, big picture stuff tends to go along with the dialoguing style of the whole person epicenter. Okay, so we have the foundation of the non-restriction based global epicenter. We have the foundation of the whole person epicenter. But we also have the foundation of the experience epicenter, which we talked about in the mind class. And you might remember that the experience epicenter, that's the epicenter for the entirety of an experience that a person is having in that moment. And so the experience epicenter tends to be very much here and now, present centered, tends to not be about the past as much or the future as much as what's the whole person experience right this moment. And so, in a lot of ways, I've come to think of the experience epicenter as maybe the most transient of the epicenters, because if someone's feeling grief, that's one experience. As that grief shifts into joy, then the epicenter changes as well. And if it shifts into anger or shame, so the experience epicenters tend to be very transient, and they're very here and now. But they're also very much a whole person process as well, just in a slightly different way. And so holding experience epicenters is an ongoing and sometimes rapid shifting of a person's experience. And I've talked about it. Some of you probably are doing it naturally, but like we can even pendulate. Like if somebody's having a conflict between two emotional states, like grief and shame, you can find the experience epicenter of grief and the experience epicenter of shame. You can hold them in a relationship to each other to kind of help work out the relationship between those complex feelings. So there is a lot we can kind of do on that one. And working with the experience epicenter, well, you can also kind of coach people. You can do kind of like guided visualizations into different states. You can pendulate different states. You can titrate emotional states. You can even hold the relationship between ambivalent states. So, like in that example of shame and anger or something like that, you can find an epicenter that kind of works on those together. All right. So, now let's take those three foundations. And what are we going to do with them for this class? So, spirit soul epicenter, it's not really a separate epicenter. It's more like a creative way to work with all of these. So, holding someone in their transpersonal self is sort of a combination of the skills contained in the three that we just talked about. So, it becomes more a process of holding a whole person epicenter or an experience epicenter, while holding dual awareness of what is happening in the interplay between the physical and the transpersonal. It's not a tough skill set. It's actually the exact same skill set you're already using for the non-restriction based global epicenter, where you're watching the pattern of tissue restrictions do their thing, simultaneously watching the body reapportion strengths and resiliencies underneath it. Now, it's more about watching the body do its work on the physical, tuning into the spirit soul, kind of reapportioning and moving around that becomes the foundation of the physical work that's happening in front of us. And so, if you're open to it, you begin watching the work that's happening on the table right there. And you also get a sense of like the spirit or the soul of the person reapportioning, undulating, working underneath it all, and giving rise to the work that's happening in the present moment. And so, as you become aware of that, you can begin asking questions like, how closely aligned is the person's spirit soul and their physical body? Is it tightly aligned where they're occupying the same space? Is it loosely aligned where one's a bit more cloudy and amorphous than the other? Or they just seem completely disconnected from each other? And so the ongoing curiosity is, what's the relationship between the spirit soul and the physical aspect of the person? And is the larger part of the person, is their spirit soul, is the transpersonal grounding the movement and transformation of the physical, or are they completely disconnected? Let me give you some case examples, because it all sounds really nice theoretically. Let me give you a couple of case examples to just kind of tease your thinking and maybe something that you can take with you as we go on. Case example number one. This is an uncle of mine who is in an active dying process, spent a little last year or year before, within the past couple of years, and spent a bit of time in the hospice while he was in the active dying process, and he did eventually pass away. And in addition to just being there with the family and holding support for my dad and the other people, and sitting in the presence of this uncle that I knew but wasn't so connected to that I was in deep emotional distress around it, just basically in the place to be able to bear witness and hold the container. So my uncle was very much on his deathbed, active dying process, organ system shutting down, absolutely unconscious, and the whole focus of the medical situation was for comfort care, until he eventually did pass away. And tapping into the whole person epicenter, not with my hands, just from sitting there, just sitting at the bedside. What was really interesting was that there was no movement into the past whatsoever. The protrusion of the whole person epicenter was entirely in linear projection, almost zero past projection. The other thing that was interesting is the spirit soul was huge. It was almost taking up, it was way above the bed. It was taking up a lot of space within the room and had almost zero connection with the physicality that was within the bed. And so the constellated pattern from the epicenter was more like an undulating cloud with extremely loose connections to the physical body. Definitely large, all over the bed and extending 3 more feet outside the body. So to me, the highlighting parts was it being much larger than the physical body, and also there being very little connection to the physical body. And so the ties that there were to the physical body were feeble, weak, and tenuous. And the constellated pattern from dropping awareness into the whole person epicenter, it was weakly responsive to the movement and the interactions in the room. So somebody might start talking in the room and there'd be like a little bit of a shift in the pattern, but not much at all. Largely unresponsive to the physicality of everything in the room. Okay, so that's case example number one. Case example number two. As you know, I teach the dissection class. We get to have lots of experiences in the dissection class on this one. After many years of teaching the dissection class, it is very possible to locate global epicenter on our donors, on these cadavers. It is also possible to tap into the non-restriction based global epicenter and regional epicenters. They just don't tend to work really, and there's no sense of reapportioning of resiliencies when tapping into a non-restriction based global epicenter for a donor. And it makes sense. There's not really any underlying vitality to mobilize the restriction patterns. So you can still do a diaphragm technique on a cadaver and it will still release, But it doesn't have the same kind of energetic reapportioning to it that you would experience if you're doing NRBGE, non-restriction based epicenter work. Now, tuning into like a whole person epicenter and looking for the spirit soul on our donors is an interesting experience because the donors are physically dead. But in almost every single dissection class, the students all have a sense that the person is still there and still have a sense that the person is observing them. And in almost every single dissection class, actually about halfway through the class, there is a point where collectively the students on their own are like, oh, the person left, you know, and it all the sense that the person was being protective of their donor. And once they saw that we were really holding a lot of reverence and respect and deconstruction, that eventually the spirit of the person just kind of takes off and leaves. And so trying to tune into a whole person epicenter on a donor at the beginning of a dissection class, it usually seems to tune into a very diffuse constellated pattern throughout the entire room with even with zero ties to the physical or very few ties to the physical. And that by day three, the diffuse constellated pattern is usually gone. Okay, one more. Case example number three. Here's one from just a couple of weeks ago. And this is table, you know, this is work here in this room right here. So, client, woman, mid 60s, her main complaints are anxiety, depression, and she has a history of trauma. She has recent parathyroid surgery and a history of going to psychotherapy, not with somebody else, a history of receiving existentially based psychotherapy. Plus manual therapies, which is why she comes to me. Her presenting issues are of getting older, dysfunctional relationship history, both in her intimate relationships as well as with her family. On her kids, she currently has an estranged trans son, a daughter with bipolar disorder, another son with substance issues, and she's also in financial distress, as well as the recent surgery is really raising up existential concerns about being able to support herself as she gets older. So she's wrestling currently with feelings of depression, isolation, and restlessness. And due to financial issues, she's unable to afford or schedule regular work with a private practice, you know, cash pay private practitioner such as myself. Such as myself. And so in her session, which was basically a one-off session, she requested that the session prioritize nervous system regulation and tissue softening related to the parathyroid surgery. Now, as we worked with her nervous system was fried and hypersensitive, revved up super quickly. And as we tapped into her non-restriction-based global epicenter and tuned into the spirit soul, what was interesting is her spirit soul almost felt decoupled from her physical body, given all those symptoms and kind of trauma history that we're talking about. To me, it felt like her spirit soul was diffuse and not clearly aligned with the soma. And during the course of the epicenter work, which was largely a silent session, by the way, during the course of the epicenter work, her nervous system downregulated deeply. And her spirit body aligned more fully with the soma, and they began responding to each other. So this is an example of a case that we would talk about in different days at each of the classes. So if I were talking about this case in the chronic depletion class, we would talk about it as being a recovery of resilience, you know, as if we were to talk about it. Anyway, you get the idea. To me, the real big thing in the work, even though it was largely a silent session, was seeing that kind of decoupled nature of her spirit soul and her physical body as she's wrestling with no small amount of distress, but just the invitation to deeply downregulate and drop into some resilience on the table, which she was able to do. And that was a unique experience for her, that what was also happening is her spirit soul was realigning itself with her physical body. So my takeaway from that particular session, or my thought is that she didn't need a ton of dialogue work. She didn't need a ton of you know, grief work. That honestly, what was most necessary is that her system She has a tremendous amount of isolation in her current experience, and that what her system really needed most of all was to be held and contacted without hesitancy, without reservation for about an hour, for an extended period of time. And not typical for me, purely gut sense, it really felt like the room might benefit from less stimulus. So I actually closed the windows, turned off the lights, gave her a towel for her eyes, not something that's typically a part of my practice at all. But what it did is allowed her to really go into internal awareness and softening while we worked with her. Checked in with her and chatted a couple of times, and her subjective experience at the end of the session is relaxation and gratitude. So hopefully that might be a little bit of an idea of how this can also be incorporated into regular table work as well. All right, let me pause there for a moment. So those are three case kind of examples, kind of painting a little bit of a picture of how you might start incorporating that into your work. What ideas or questions do you have?
I have one. I am amazed that you can feel the global epicenter on a dissection in an actual dead body. It's amazing. I just think that's incredible. But I also totally get this what we're calling the spirit epicenter, and I've had so many numerous experiences with this. It's absolutely incredible. People that are alive and people that nearly they've like where the spirit or the soul is parting out of the body and it's not in alignment, and it's all usually traumatic stuff. So it's people who have had some big hits, either gone unconscious or just big traumas like fractured collarbones or broken backs or severed femoral arteries. And I've seen some pretty incredible things. So this is awesome. Like I just love listening to what you've just said, and it just makes so much sense. And I just it's incredible because the person that when you start to just hold their system and notice where what's happening and where is this spirit epicenter, it's like it generally wants to come back in. And I love it how you're talking about the tentacles or the attachment parts, and some have a lot more of attachment and some are it's already part of it and it hasn't completely gone off the energy off the body, whereas also sometimes it's way off the body and flying away. But all of a sudden, even a still point, and actually I've had the experience of even just doing a still point on the back of the cranium has brought it way back in, and the person has stayed alive. So it's awesome. I love listening to this. It's great. Thanks. It's
Awesome.
cool. It's
Yeah, you
exciting.
bet.
Yeah.
I've had experiences also of two, I mean, a lot of experiences, but two that felt different. One, like that the person feels kind of disassociated, like a spirit disassociation, and there's this depth of this energy. But I've also had an experience of somebody who fell off a two-floor story ladder. And that felt more like almost a vitality or etheric feel. It didn't have like that depth of whole body because he felt like he was still, his soul seemed like still in the body, like this guy was going to make it and live, which was kind of extraordinary. And he came into my office like 2 weeks after, but the shock, like his, it just felt more. I don't, yeah, to me, it felt different. Like there was more an etheric, like, I don't know if you've ever had that experience.
Yeah, I love all of that. Yeah, I mean, it and as you'll see, it's almost impossible to talk about transpersonal without talking about trauma, just because those are really closely linked with each other for so many people. And so I think that's part of the exploration that we'll be doing over time as well. And also coming off of both Hattie and Cindy's comments, you've probably noticed, an ongoing theme through all of the classes has been this idea of compartmentalization, that trauma, that kind of living life tends to compartmentalize our experience, body, mind, and spirit, removes us out of wholeness and integration. And that so much of what therapy is, that people, they come into our offices and they're when they lay down, they're compartmentalized physically, mentally, emotionally, and sometimes all three or more. And that part of the work that we're doing is helping reintegrate, build those connections. Kevin. Oh, you're muted, by the way.
As you were describing case one and case two, your uncle and facilitating dissection class, I was trying to integrate that into just my experience of what people report as having memories during anesthesia, like during operations. Would you say that could be more a spirit phenomena or of the body?
I don't know why you couldn't approach it from a spirit soul point of view. I mean,
Yeah.
what a great question. It's like, all right, when somebody's under general anesthesia, where do they go? I mean, the biologically oriented people would have a very different answer than the transpersonal oriented people. I'm like, all right, where do you go when you're not able to form experiences and memories?
And then question two. I was taking a walk in nature to center yesterday after a long day at clinic and thinking about spending the day attuned to such nuanced and subtle energy to try to be effective clinically and bumping up against the discomfort of adding more resolution to that currently doesn't feel great in the environment we all inhabit. I wonder how you filter, once you've developed the ability to work with and facilitate this for your clients, how do you ground and center down from that energy?
You mean from kind of like opening up awareness to the possibility of the transpersonal and how to move in and out of that awareness?
Yeah, when we expand our envelope to things that are bigger than ourselves, to things that are bigger than, what even an individual is aware of, then there's infinite possibility, right? And that's the leverage and the power of the work, surely. But also, I don't know, the world feels loud to me right now.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the quick answer I would have on that one would be intentionality and mindfulness. Intentionality for when you're open to larger things, when you're not open to larger things. But on an even deeper level, part of being able to be intentional in that way is also cultivating our own contemplative practices and our own rituals that are meaningful to us. So, not just a passive recipient of the transpersonal, but an active participant. And what are your beliefs and what are your rituals? And how do you reestablish a sense of wholeness when you're starting to feel fractured? And that's both in our own reflective practices, but also in the therapy that we give to each other. So having mentorship and supervision and a community of people that understand where you're at and being able to gain that. Yeah. Marvelous questions. I would love to continue on. I see we're getting close. I do have a few more things I want to share before we close out altogether. So let me go ahead and go back into those. I think we might have a couple of people that might have to hop off right at the top of the hour. You will have access to this recording. I'll email out a link to the recording, because we're not going to have a portal page for the course for a little while, but I'll make sure you have that right away. Okay, so let me finish up the last few slides I have. Just so we were complete with this one. Okay, so intersectionality of ways of knowing. Oh, you've heard me, a lot of you have heard me talk about this before, particularly in relationship to the Upledger Alumni Group. But just want to make it explicit that, the bigger question of how do we know what we know? And acknowledging that there's not one way to know stuff. We can know stuff through our intuition. It's our gut sense. It's what feels right. We can know stuff through our sensations. There's what we touch, what we smell, what we see, what we hear. There is also knowing through what we think about. It's like, well, if this happens, then this happens. And that's a different way of knowing than the sensory. There's core faith. And then there's scientific ways of knowing. And I think all ways of knowing are really important. And that part of, and this takes us way back to the multi-frame thinking that we introduced back in SIBT, the body, is that part of a mature therapeutic skill set is being able to identify paradigms and be able to shift paradigms as needed to find the answers we seek. And so on this one, in that list, you might know that you might lean extra heavily on one way of knowing and less on another. And so part of your ongoing growth is to really try to become skilled at all the ways of knowing so that we can hop among ways of knowing as well. And also be aware of them enough that you don't confuse them too much. Like a lot of you know that I tend to have very little patience for faith-based conversations masquerading as science conversations when they're really conversations that should be approached differently. And that there's not only one way of knowing something. Each has its own strengths and limitations. Really discovering that is important. And that when we're in the session with the client, and we'll really get into this as we move into the us themed day, is that we're in a room and we're co-creating meaning with someone, and that co-creation, that ontological co-creation of meaning, incorporates all ways of meaning, each with its own place, all ways of knowing. Okay, so this is for your own reflection as we move on. What are your limitations and growing edges in working with diverse spiritual views? Some people might have edges is if there's part of you that likes being the knower, that likes knowing stuff, likes being the authority. If you have any attachment to being the knower, then transpersonal work can be a little bit challenging. Particular biases you might have towards particular belief systems will get in the way. If you have any sort of attachment or identification with being correct, that will come back to bite you particularly quickly, because a lot of those all basically lead to dogma. So I'd like to invite you to just sort of contemplate, and none of us are perfect. So I'd like to invite you to contemplate what discomforts you have around approaching different belief systems and around the transpersonal. And then here's our last stuff. So here are a couple of things, and I'm hoping that some of you will be able to stick around to decide this one. There are two kind of assignments that we're doing together. So I'd love to partner you up, and your team of two basically wants you to you get to choose a particular religion, faith, spirituality, or some other way that people use to come to know the transpersonal one. I'd prefer that you choose one that you're not super familiar with. So if you identify as Christian, I would say choose something other than Christianity. And here's what you and your partner are going to do. You get together, chat with each other a little bit, maybe just do a little bit of research. It doesn't have to be a ton, but enough so that way you're not jacking it up. And if it's a particular belief system, kind of identify what are the core ideas, what are the ideas that that particular belief system has. And for those people who are part of that belief system, what can you identify are some of the real benefits and strengths for that point of view? And what supports are there? So if somebody comes in and they identify as Christian, you want to know how it might really benefit in their life and what kind of supports it has to offer for when they run into difficult moments. And that the supports offered in Christianity might be different from the supports offered in Buddhism, that might be different from the supports offered by Akashic records or something else like that. Also, in addition to the strengths, benefits, and supports, what are some of the difficulties the members might encounter? Maybe they're marginalized by the dominant, by the maybe they're margin a marginalized group by the dominant population culturally. Or maybe their beliefs is just so different that people don't understand them. And so there's a lot of confusion. And then also, when members of that particular point of view end up becoming disillusioned, or if they leave that particular faith or tradition, what are some of the predictable difficulties that the members might face? When somebody starts calling themselves a recovering Catholic, what can that mean for people? Or, I've had a number of clients over the years that are former Jehovah's Witness or former Mormon. And those are religions that are sometimes very difficult for people to leave because they face ostracization, family, and community, and can be really challenging to find other supports. So those are some of the key ideas. And so here are some of them. The possible topics is, it could be Christianity, it could be Judaism, it could be Islam, it could be Buddhism. You could choose Native American faiths or indigenous faiths like curanderismo, or maybe a larger topic of other ways of coming to know self, like astrology, gene keys, human design, tarot, or maybe have another idea. But basically, I want you to kind of choose your topic and we'll kind of pair you up with each other a little bit. So before we come back to that, and then also like we did with the mind class, very capstone project for this class is just a case study. And so I'd like to invite you to start thinking of somebody that you're already working with that where your work will be moving into the transpersonal as well. Just continue working with them. But some client that you have that you've been working with in an integrated body, mind, spirit sort of way. And then I'll give you the format for the case history a little bit later on. But basically, just write up the case study of the work you've done with that particular client through an SIBT lens to help, so the SIBT lens basically helps you describe, conceptualize, and guide the work that you've done, including all the modalities that are part of what you know. And so maybe go ahead and get started on who you might want to use for the case study. Okay, we can go ahead and stop there. That was if time remains. Okay, so questions, and does anybody have any topics that they're particularly interested for that kind of little researchy project I talked about? So if you got a direction you want to go ahead and put it out there now, and you can start claiming that, and we'll start partnering you up with people. Actually, you could put it in the chat even.
Can you just restate that last question or suggestion? What did you say again?
What do I want you all to do? All right, let me go ahead and stop the recording. Well, no, I guess we can leave it on. So for the part where I'm basically asking you to find a belief system
Yes.
and look for its strengths and limitations, all that kind of stuff. If you happen to know one that you'd be interested in getting to know a little bit, go ahead and put that in the chat right now. And basically, we're going to be partnering you up. So like the first two people who say Islam will get to be part of that one. Okay, so let's do this. So Buddhism. We got Kevin on that one. Kevin and Tony. Did I miss anybody? Kevin and Tony. Islam. We got. I'm gonna stop the recording.